At Arizona State University, we're bringing world-class education from our globally acclaimed faculty to you. Ranked number one in innovation for 10 consecutive years, and number two among public universities for employability, ASU isn't just ahead of the curve, it's creating new paths to success. Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university. Online, that's a degree better. Explore more than 300 undergraduate, graduate, and certificate programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
Save on holiday favorites at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get a free Signature Farms whole frozen turkey. Grade A with a minimum purchase of $150 or more in a single transaction. Member price. Limit one offer per household. Plus, get 12 ounces of Oscar Mayer bacon for $3.97 each with digital coupon. Limit four. Also this week at Safeway, Lucerne milk, half gallons, selected varieties are $2.47 each with digital coupon. Limit two. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
My fellow Americans, mahalo.
It's April 2011, White House Correspondents' Dinner in D.C., a giant annual party for politicians and the press corps. President Barack Obama on stage, roasting himself, his colleagues, the press, and the odd celebrity.
As some of you heard, the state of Hawaii released my official long-form birth certificate. Anyway, Donald Trump is here tonight.
For months leading up to this, Donald Trump was going on talk shows, falsely claiming that Obama wasn't born in the U.S., which, if that was true, would have made him a wrongfully elected president. People believed it. The rumor grew, enough so that Obama had to weigh in.
But no one is happier, no one is prouder to put this birth certificate matter to rest than the Donald. Obviously, we all know about your credentials and breadth of experience. No, seriously, just recently, in an episode of Celebrity Apprentice, at the steakhouse, the men's cooking team did not impress the judges from Omaha Steaks. And you, Mr. Trump, recognized that the real problem was a lack of leadership. And so ultimately, you didn't blame Little John or Meatloaf. You fired Gary Busey. And these are the kind of decisions that would keep me up at night.
Omarosa Newman, she was actually also on The Apprentice, was also at the Correspondents' Dinner that night. Later, in a PBS documentary, she said,
"It just kept going and going, and he just kept hammering him. And I thought, oh, Barack Obama is starting something. I don't know if he'll be able to finish."
Donald Trump went on to beat Hillary Clinton for the job of president. He literally took over Obama's home and job.
Every critic, every detractor will have to bow down to President Trump. It's everyone who's ever doubted Donald, whoever disagreed, whoever challenged him. It is the ultimate revenge to become the most powerful man in the universe.
Now, fast forward a few more years. It's 2021, Joe Biden's the president, and one afternoon on the White House lawn, he signs an executive order saying that by 2030, half of all new cars sold would be electric. It was a piece of Biden's big plan to prioritize the climate. He wanted to make EVs, that's electric vehicles, by the way, a lot cheaper. This was new. Biden all in on EVs, and the big automakers too.
We are the United States of America. There's not a single solitary thing, nothing, beyond our capacity to get done. I want to thank the CEOs of the automobile companies, and I also want to thank all the auto workers.
At the White House that day are members of Congress, the UAW, United Auto Workers, and a bunch of bigwigs from the Big Three. That's General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis, better known as Chrysler. Right before putting pen to paper, Biden invites his colleagues to come up and stand by his side.
Come on, let's let the CEOs go through, too.
Let's let the CEOs through, too.
This is an executive order strengthening America's leadership in clean cars and trucks. And again, let me start off by thanking the CEOs as well as the UAW. But you all and why it's happening. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
There is one guy who'd done more to make EVs happen than anybody in the big three, who was missing from the White House that day. Noticeably so. But he was watching. So, on one hand, we've got Barack Obama roasting Donald Trump and the fallout from that. On the other, Joe Biden hyping up electric cars. Separate events, 10 years apart. What do they have to do with each other? I think kind of a lot. I'm Max Chafkin, a reporter with Bloomberg Businessweek. This is Citizen Elon. This is a show about Elon Musk, someone I've spent almost 20 years reporting on. For the longest time, Elon's been a champion for electric cars, a champion for outer space, and as of this summer, a champion for Donald Trump. The Elon I've always known has been largely apolitical. Now, in the weeks leading up to the 2024 election, Elon's funneled more than $100 million into getting Donald Trump elected. What I'd really like to understand is, what happened? Why is Elon suddenly so committed to Trump winning? And if it works, if he successfully gets Trump elected, what's in that for him? The first time I interviewed Elon Musk was in 2006. Tesla was just a startup. Today, it's the most valuable car company in the world. You talk to CEOs normally, and they're scripted. They talk in sound bites. And Elon is the opposite. He'll say whatever he wants, whatever's on his mind.
It is a fixer-upper of a planet. But eventually, you can transform Mars into an Earth-like planet.
How would you do that?
You'd warm it up. The fast way is drop thermonuclear weapons over the poles.
Guys, I actually have to say, we have to keep it, no essays, only questions.
Everyone was a slave. Everyone.
Well, not everyone was a slave.
No, everyone was a slave.
Okay.
We are all descended from slaves. All of us.
Yeah.
But it's just a question of when.
Of course, Elon could also be cold, cruel. Looking back on it now, I think maybe I was letting him off too easily, paying attention to his achievements and ignoring his bad behavior. In terms of politics, Elon's always been kind of a chameleon. When George W. Bush was president, Elon didn't have much to say about climate change. He drove a Porsche. When Barack Obama was president, Elon became a green capitalist, ecologically conscious. He wanted to blanket America with solar panels. His take on Trump running matched most Democrats and moderate Republicans.
You know, hopefully Trump doesn't get the nomination of, you know, the Republican Party. That's because I think that's, that wouldn't be good.
And again, after 2016, Musk more or less got on board with Trump. Meetings with Steve Bannon, was on advisory councils to the president. It was business as usual. But then COVID came and something changed, especially after Biden became president.
You have to remember that, like, you know, Elon Musk is a guy who can't get enough of the dopamine feedback of people and crowds and adulation.
Dana Hull is another reporter here at Bloomberg. She also covers Elon Musk.
And during the pandemic, we were all locked down in our houses, and he was incredibly angry that Tesla's factory in California was shut down because of COVID restrictions.
On an earnings call, talking to investors, Elon called stay-at-home orders in Alameda County, where Tesla's factories were based, fascist. Quote, "This is not democratic. This is not freedom. Give people back their goddamn freedom."
And then you started seeing more tweets that were kind of questioning, you know, the efficacy of vaccines and just like a little bit more COVID denialism. And then
Dana said by this point, it was just a hop, skip, and a jump to much fringier conspiracy theories. And then there was something else that happened during COVID, something huge.
At some point, Elon Musk became the richest person in the world. And I think that once you're the richest person in the world, you are emboldened to do things that maybe you weren't before.
Let's go back to that summit, August 2021. A month after that, Elon's at a tech conference. He's on stage in front of an audience. And that snub that he felt, he's still thinking about it.
You know, like Biden held this EV summit. Didn't invite Tesla. Invited GM, Ford, Chrysler and UAW. Navy summit on the White House.
So you were pissed.
Does this sound maybe a little biased?
8 months go by, and Elon sits down for another interview with the guys running a club for Tesla owners in Silicon Valley. It's called the Tesla Owners Club of Silicon Valley. And remember that White House snub? Elon is still pissed off about it.
Last year, President Biden held an EV summit where Tesla was explicitly not allowed to come. Now, Tesla's made 2/3 of all electric vehicles in the United States, deliberately excluding us from an EV summit at the White House. That tells you all you need to know.
It's insane.
Insane.
Fast forward another 18 months, a year and a half later, Elon's on stage at a New York Times event. He's talking to the financial columnist, Andrew Ross Sorkin.
You've been very frustrated with the Biden administration, feeling like they did not respect what you've created.
Have you forgotten yet about that White House snub? No, neither has Elon.
Well, I mean, without any, doing nothing to provoke the Biden administration, they held an electric vehicle summit at the White House and specifically refused to let Tesla attend. We'd done nothing to provoke them. Then Biden went on to add insult to injury.
Elon says President Biden even singled out General Motors for having, quote, led the EV revolution.
This was in the same quarter that Tesla made 300,000 electric cars and GM made 26. Does that seem fair to you?
Tesla actually sold 308,000 cars that quarter. Elon's underselling the number. And he's also right about GM, that they really did just sell 26. Something important to note here is that Elon has never been a fan of labor unions. That's putting it mildly. Joe Biden, on the other hand, the opposite. Biden loves labor unions. He's called himself the, quote, most pro-union president in history. He made it a big part of his presidential campaign.
Can you give us any insight into why Tesla wasn't included in this event?
Well, we, of course, welcome...
This is from a White House press briefing.
So it's not because Tesla is a non-union shop?
Well, these are the three largest employers of the United Auto Workers, so I'll let you draw your own conclusion. Go ahead.
Translation, yes. Which, classic politics, right? But Elon didn't take it that way. Biden doesn't have to include every automaker. It's not like Toyota or Volkswagen were there either. But Elon's reaction was personal. He couldn't seem to move beyond his own feelings, to see this as anything other than a grievous insult. On the one hand, it's surprising to see a busy CEO fixate like this. Doesn't he have bigger things to worry about? Who cares about GM and Biden? On the other hand, this is vintage Elon.
You know, if he didn't like what you were doing or thought you were an idiot or, you know, any one of these sort of negative reactions to you personally.
This is Jim Cantrell. He was on the founding team at SpaceX. For a long time, he and Elon worked closely together.
He wouldn't come talk to you about it. He would either call you an idiot. He would tell you you're wrong. He would challenge you. He would yell at you. And then later he'd just fire you.
Elon is indisputably really impressive. Jim agrees. But Jim also could not take Elon's mood swings. And so he quit.
By the way, that's a controversial topic that he...
Last year, the writer Walter Isaacson published a sprawling biography of Elon's life so far. Elon participated in the book's creation. He talked to Isaacson. And when he talked about his early days at SpaceX...
He told Isaacson that I wasn't an employee, and I don't know why he says that, but I was.
Yeah, I'm not trying to litigate this. I just...
No, I understand. It's a sore point for me, so I am.
This fixation on credit, this pettiness, it's also vintage Elon. He actually got into it big time with Martin Eberhard, the guy who started Tesla. Martin himself claimed that Elon was taking up more than his share of credit for the company. And even though these guys settled their lawsuit in 2009, it's something Elon still brings up all the time. I told Jim my theory about the correspondence dinner and the EV summit, and I asked him, does he see the same parallels that I do?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I think he and Trump probably feel a kinship. There's a certain... This resonates with what I understand of Elon. There's a certain sort of sense of fairness and fair play that, like Trump, he feels violated.
Where Jim's take diverged from mine was about Elon's feelings.
I just think Elon was hurt, and maybe justifiably hurt. Like, this guy revolutionized the electric vehicle industry. He spends, you know, a decade and a half not taken seriously, called a joke, and then the president of the United States basically finally embraces it. Like, everything that Elon has imagined is happening without him.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something that goes against that theory. Elon, I don't think he was hurt by it. I think he doesn't really want to be part of that crowd. I don't think he cared. There's a certain Rage in the Machine song, you know, "Fuck you, I'll do what I want to." I mean, that if I had a theme song for Elon, that would be it.
That EV conference was the summer of 2021. Within a few months, the rage started to bubble up. And it was a very specific, politically charged rage. Usually in tweet form, usually some right-wing line about Biden being too old, calling Biden, quote, a damp sock puppet in human form, or saying Biden looks good for a 200-year-old. When I read these, I could tell that Elon was mad. What I couldn't tell is where these insults, these specific words, were coming from.
NPC is the biggest one to me.
Ellie Reeve is a CNN correspondent. She spent the past 10 years or so covering the far right. In November 2021, she noticed this tweet from Elon. It was a random comment on a six-month-old video where Biden was praising the auto workers union. Elon responded to that video by tweeting that Biden, quote, talks like an NPC with a limited dialogue tree. That acronym is what caught Ellie's attention.
NPC for non-player character comes from a video game world. It's like, you know, instead of the character that you can play, it's this static character with no interiority that, you know, gives you directions or something. And in the 4chan world, that's their term for unthinking liberals.
Real quick, 4chan was this free-for-all online forum where people would share memes. It's also where a lot of Donald Trump's early support comes from. You've probably heard this term alt-right. That started on 4chan. Back to Ellie and the NPCs. The tweet she noticed, it was basically Elon calling Biden a tool of the elite. And I don't mean elite in the normal sense. I mean it in the conspiratorial sense of an elite cabal, probably Jewish, that is secretly out to get us. Ellie says NPC is a kind of acronym that would normally be thrown around by neo-Nazis, men's rights groups, Proud Boys, incels.
Elon Musk is a very powerful person, you know? He's not a guy with a Twitter handle. Like, this guy can influence wars. Does Elon have the social skills to actually lead a mass of men? I don't know. But does he have enough of a network to spread these ideas into, like, among people who are in the position to truly affect how the government works? Like, that's the question for me.
Ellie's not alone on this one, and she's certainly not the only person who's noticing Elon's changing politics.
The first thing that I really noticed about Musk was during the rise of the alt-right.
Joan Donovan is a sociologist. She specializes in disinformation. That's people or groups who lie on purpose for political gain.
He seemed to be very cued into the idea of population collapse and this idea.
This is like the NPC thing. It doesn't sound that bad on its face, but if you're paying attention to the subtext, it's not just about babies.
He seems to believe that the wrong kind of people are the ones who are reproducing, because white people are not reproducing at the same rate as other people. He does really get his hackles up about population collapse and about this idea that white people might not be the dominant culture going forward.
Right. Eugenics, a discredited theory about selective breeding. By the way, we invited Elon Musk to come talk to us or to provide comment. He didn't respond. Another thing that Elon's growing interested in, and I mean really interested in, is free speech. Specifically, the idea that right-wing guys on the internet are being suppressed by social media sites. Those right-wing guys, though, I don't think they were really paying attention to Musk. Not yet, anyway. When did he start mattering to them as a figure?
Around the time he started to say that he should just buy Twitter. That's when I first saw the far right really starting to believe he was a mover and that he was going to do something huge.
After the attacks on the Capitol on January 6th in 2021, Twitter banned tens of thousands of accounts associated with the right-wing conspiracy theory known as QAnon. They even banned Donald Trump's account permanently for the role he played in inciting violence. Then, in March of 2022, something happened that especially caught Elon's attention.
Twitter suspends this satirical newspaper, the Babylon Bee. They're like a right-wing version of The Onion. The Bee had tweeted about a trans woman who was a White House staffer. They called her Man of the Year. Twitter said that violated its policy against hateful conduct. The Bee's owner refused to take the tweet down. Musk hears about this from his ex-wife, Tallulah Riley. She sends him a text a few days later. Quote, America is going insane, it says. The Babylon Bee suspension got crazy. Can you buy Twitter and then delete it, please? Or can you buy Twitter and make it radically free speech? And so he did.
Welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight, a good news show. Don't get those too often. It's April 25th, 2022. Elon Musk bought Twitter today. Unlike the leaders of Facebook, Google, Apple, Amazon, Elon Musk believes in free speech. This is the single biggest political development since Donald Trump's election in 2016. It is certainly the most threatening challenge to the corrupt and incompetent leadership of this country. Now, that may not
be- I remember watching this and rolling my eyes. I thought, Elon Musk is no free speech savior. He's a business guy who's just spent $44 billion to buy Twitter. Why would he mess with that? He's got other companies to worry about. But now, looking back, I think Tucker really was seeing something. Something seismic and inevitable. For years, Elon and Trump have been marching in the same general direction, which makes sense. They're a lot alike. They both come from privileged backgrounds. They both grew up under hugely accomplished fathers whose shadows they wanted out from under. They both fought hard for their rightful place, not just to be inside of the rooms where history happens, but to be the ones in charge. But they never really made it all the way through the door. To President Obama, Trump was a punchline. To President Biden, Elon was irrelevant. There's something Jim told me. He's a guy who worked at SpaceX with Elon that I keep coming back to. It's about that correspondence dinner and the EV summit.
It's a slight that tells you that they think they're the parents sitting at the table and your child is not invited. And I can see Elon wanting to just destroy the table, burn it to the ground.
What does Elon do right after closing the Twitter deal? He reinstates Donald Trump's account. If you can't join them, beat them. That's next time. Citizen Elon is produced by Lena Mesitsis. Rehan Harmansi is our senior editor. Blake Maples handles engineering and William Elstrom fact-checking. Brendan Francis Noonan is our executive producer. Sage Bauman is the head of Bloomberg Podcasts. Big thanks to the Elon Inc. crew, David Papadopoulos, Naomi Shaven, Magnus Henriksen, Stacey Wong. Listen every Tuesday for breaking Elon news. And thanks to our Bloomberg colleagues, David Fox, Julia Press, Dana Hull, Sarah Fryer, Kurt Wagner, Mark Millian, Becca Greenfield, Margaret Sutherland, Allison Mobley, Jackie Kessler, Ariel Brown, Chris Nicenzo, and Albert Hicks. An extra big thanks to Brad Stone, editor of Business Week, and Katie Boyce, executive editor of Bloomberg Digital, for their unflagging support. Part two of Citizen Elon comes out next week, and since we won't know how this thing ends until after the election, that's when you'll hear the last part of our series. I'm Max Chafkin. If you have a minute, rate and review our show. It'll help other listeners find us. Thanks again.
Unborn babies may kick their mother 30 times an hour, making moms wonder, is that a karate champion in there? Well, one thing she won't wonder about is finding a great doctor at one of our 65 convenient Bay Area locations. Stanford Medicine Children's Health.
Does your heart long to wander? To discover the deep secrets of coral reefs? Explore the wonders of the California coast and island hop from the Galapagos to Madagascar? Feed your wild heart. Travel the world right here in San Francisco at the California Academy of Sciences. Get tickets at calacademy.org. See penguin feedings, puppet shows, and other live programs daily at the Academy.